We're seeing a major surge in new COVID-19 cases in Wisconsin. Today, DHS reported nearly 3,000 confirmed cases. Yesterday was a new all-time high with more than 3,000 new cases confirmed. Governor Evers' new executive order limiting many indoor gatherings to 25% capacity went into effect yesterday. And to help struggling hospitals, the National Guard has set up a field hospital at the Wisconsin State Fair Park in West Allis. We've also seen some new releases in recent days from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, including findings about the coronavirus and how it spreads. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the state's latest surge in cases? What are your concerns? What questions do you still have about the coronavirus and the disease it causes, COVID-19? Have you had it yourself? Have you recovered? What was the experience like? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Patrick Remington joins us again to look at the latest numbers and answer any questions you might have about coronavirus and what we know about it. He's Professor Emeritus and Associate Dean in the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Remington, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be here, Rob. Thanks.
Well, we see the daily reports, Dr. Remington, with the numbers. Tell us where we are in the state. How bad are things right now?
Well, it depends where you are in the state. We have some hot spots in Wisconsin, in the Fox River Valley and up in the northeastern counties of the state. But, you know, there isn't a county that's been spared. So this is not an issue for just one place or one business. It's an issue that affects all of us. There isn't a person who's going to be spared either in their health perspective or in the work that they do.
What has been the recovery rate so far from COVID and how well are people doing after they get this in Wisconsin?
Well, the seriousness of the disease is directly related to the age of the patient and also to whether they have any comorbid conditions or things like diabetes, obesity, and heart disease. With young people, particularly children, the disease course so far has been pretty mild. Relatively few young people get hospitalized, and most people are actually asymptomatic. Now, what we don't know is whether there are lingering effects. There are viruses that people get infected with early in life, and like chickenpox or HPV, that come back later and increase the risk of herpes zoster or even cancer. So we really don't know what the long-term effects are of people who have asymptomatic or very mild illness. On the other hand, the disease in older people, particularly people with chronic diseases, can be quite severe. And some treatments have improved, but I think in general, it continues to be a disease that causes severe respiratory problems. And you can see it in our numbers. We have record rates of hospitalization, and we had an all-time high number of deaths in the state. So it continues to be a serious illness.
And I know a concern from the start has been hospital capacity. We saw countries around the world facing problems early in the U.S., in the New York City area in particular. And now we're getting reports, especially I think in northeastern Wisconsin, that hospitals are coming pretty close to their capacity. What are we seeing there?
Well, despite some of the people who may doubt that this is a serious illness, all you have to do is talk to anybody working in healthcare. Talk to anybody in a hospital working in an intensive care unit, emergency room, and they will say that they've seen some of the sickest patients come through the door, patients who are having significant problems breathing and other organ system problems. So yes, it's extremely serious. And when you have an outbreak like we're having with thousands of new cases, particularly community spread, so that it doesn't just limit itself to young people. Young people often bring it back home to parents or grandparents. And so by spreading throughout the community, we will continue to see with that kind of transmission rate, we will continue to see hospitalizations and unfortunately people dying from the disease.
Talking to Dr. Patrick Remington from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health about the latest high COVID-19 numbers here in the state. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about the latest news on the disease. That's 800-642-1234. I know there's frustration out there, Dr. Remington, in the public health community around the fact that we know a lot of what works to stop the spread of the disease, the masks, the social distancing, some hand washing mixed in there. We're not doing those things, it sounds like, and we're helping the disease spread still.
Well, I think it's variable. I think there are some people, maybe some of your listeners could talk about how they've really developed a very safe lifestyle by sheltering at home. And when they go out, they wear masks universally and they practice good hand hygiene. And if they gather, they do so outdoors and maintain good physical distancing. And for those individuals, the risk of getting COVID-19 is very low. And so from that perspective, it's not a significant problem. Now, for people who are essential workers, for people who gather in high-risk places, indoors and poorly ventilated, perhaps bars or taverns, with people close to one another, then those are risky environments. And so for those people, it's not surprising that we've seen transmission. So I think everybody has their own sort of risk tolerance. Whether you have decided that you're going to do everything you can to avoid getting this infection, all the way over to the other spectrum, there may be some young people who've decided it's okay and they're going to go about their day and not worry about it. Maybe even engage in high risk practices to get the infection and get it over with.
Now, we've talked some about the mindset here. Where we think about it as my risk of getting this disease. And I think a lot of the attention is my risk of spreading this disease. If I have it, if I'm carrying it, maybe even unknowingly. Do you think that's a mindset that's going to help us slow the spread of it if we're thinking not just about protecting ourselves, but protecting others?
Well, this has been hard to, I think, for people to really understand that there are two aspects to COVID-19. One is your own personal practices that affect your risk. And that includes time you spend indoors in poorly ventilated buildings, not practicing good hand hygiene, and not wearing a mask. So those are things that individuals do to protect their own health. But this is unusual in that wearing a mask, the research suggests that the best or the greatest benefit of wearing a mask is for people who happen to be sick and don't know it, for people who are pre-symptomatic or have the infection and are asymptomatic. Wearing a mask reduces the amount of virus that's put in the air. And so that's something you're doing for someone else. That's really something that you're protecting the health of others. And so to me, wearing a mask, you shouldn't think about one or the other, whether it's for you or others. It's just a good thing to do. And we should get that to be the norm when people are, you can't be physically distanced or you have to go indoors to shop or decide to go out to a restaurant. Wearing a mask as much as possible is a safe practice, not just for you, but for others.
We're talking to Dr. Patrick Remington from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the latest news on the novel coronavirus, the disease it causes, COVID-19. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about what we know about the disease, how it spreads, how to stop it? What have you done, if anything, to change your life throughout this long process, especially now that the numbers are peaking in Wisconsin, one of the national hotspots, or zooming in, a number of the national hotspots here in the state? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the latest record-breaking surge in new coronavirus cases in Wisconsin. Dr. Patrick Remington is with us from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, Professor Emeritus and Associate Dean there. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How has this changed your life? Are you changing your health habits? Have you done so over the course of this thing, doing more so now that it's getting worse in the state? And do you have questions? Call 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls. Brian is with us in Fox Valley. Brian, hi.
Hey, how are you doing today? I had a quick question here about when a person is diagnosed with COVID-19, how long is the extent of time in which they shed virus to infect other people? Thanks. I'll take my question and answer off the air.
Thanks, Brian. Important question, Dr. Remington.
Well, it's a really important question. And the answer is there's a range. So when symptoms begin, the person has probably already been shedding virus. And that can last up to 10 days after an individual has had their first symptom. So that's the reason for isolation recommendations for anybody who's been diagnosed. You look at the onset of symptoms and you say for 10 days, we want you to be isolated so that you reduce the risk of transmitting it to others. That's different than being quarantined. Quarantined is when if you're exposed to somebody who's either known or probably has the disease, and then you have to spend 2 weeks away from others because you could be getting sick. It could take 3, 4, 5 days for you to get sick. And then there's another 10 days when you'd want to not be infecting others. So I think the best thing to do is not to have to memorize all these numbers and days. If you have any questions, certainly if you have symptoms, is to contact your health provider or your local health department. They have people who are contacting people all the time or who are ill or have been exposed to people who are ill.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Brian with us in Milwaukee now. Brian, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Brian?
I had a question about, I was just curious, it seemed like the death rate had gone down a touch from what I've been paying attention to, and I was just curious if there was new treatments or new ways that patients were being dealt with in the hospitals, ones that were severely ill.
Dr. Remington?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. The most important predictor of the death rate is how many cases are being diagnosed, because as cases go up, then the death rate goes up. And so during April and May, we had quite a dip in the number of cases. People were really staying safe at home. But as people went back to business and got out more, as you have heard, the cases have skyrocketed to over 3,000. So that has driven the death rates up. The second thing is the age of the people being infected. So if we have at the end of August and during September, the real spike in incidence was in young people, particularly college students returning to campus. But that didn't lead to a spike in deaths because young people are less likely to be hospitalized and die from COVID. So it's really complicated. The number of deaths is an end result of the number of cases we're seeing, the age of the cases, and then the quality of the treatment. So teasing out how well the treatment is working and whether we've seen significant improvements turns out to be really hard to do. There's some clinical evidence, anecdotal evidence that patients are doing better with some of the new treatments. But the most important thing is to obviously be safe and prevent the illness in the first place. That's really what we want to see. We want to see that death rate coming down because of dropping incidence rates, rather than hoping for better treatments.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Jeff joins us now in Rice Lake. Jeff, hi.
Hi there.
What do you want to bring up, Jeff?
I got a question. Yeah, I've had COVID back in February before we really know what it was. My wife and two daughters work at one of the largest medical facilities in the state. And I'm just assuming my wife brought it home, to just because we didn't know anything about it back then. So I had my antibodies tested to see if they're still there. And according to the lab, I'm in pretty good shape. I don't remember the numbers, but they said it was very high. And that's, how many months is that? March, April, May, June, July.
That's 7 months by my math, Jeff. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot for calling in, Jeff. And I'm glad you didn't have the worst case getting COVID yourself. I'm glad you pulled through. That antibody question, Dr. Remington, and immunity after catching the disease. What have we figured out so far about that?
Well, there's lots of research going on, and a study like this takes time. We don't have the luxury of looking back years or decades to follow people who've been infected, let's say in the 1950s or 1970s, and to see if they are still susceptible to infection. The evidence is that natural infection, particularly when someone is quite ill, increases the antibodies and does provide some immunity from subsequent infection. So I think the best advice is that you're probably less susceptible to getting infection again, but there have been some cases where people have been infected, they've developed antibodies, and then they've demonstrated a new infection from a slightly different form of the virus. So I think even if you've had infection, you have antibodies, you probably are less susceptible to reinfection, but I think the best thing to do, particularly if you are older or may have chronic conditions, is to avoid getting infected again.
Thanks a lot for that call. Anne joins us now in Madison. Anne, hello.
Hi. So I am a caregiver, and all three of my clients had COVID, and they were at home. And so I was testing every single day. I just drove over to the Alliance Center every day after work. And I was negative, negative, negative. And then I had one positive. So I figured, okay, I've picked it up. But there were two more results came in after that because I had been doing it every day. And the two after that were both negative. So I had like a whole bunch of negatives, one positive, and then two plus negatives again. So my job told me, go ahead and take 10 days off. The health department called me to do the contact tracing, and she said, well, you know, since you have had two negatives, you're probably good to go back to work. And that doesn't make, I don't know.
And thanks for the call. With the test we have, are there some false positives and or false negatives, Dr. Remington?
Without a doubt, there are no perfect tests for COVID. There are false positives. Sometimes people test positive, and when you actually look for evidence of infection, maybe look for antibody later, there's no evidence. That test just happened to be positive. There are other coronaviruses. Three types cause the common cold. Three or four types cause the common cold. So you could have some cross-reactivity. So having two negative tests is a general way to know that you're not currently contagious, and it seems reasonable then to have a green light to go back to work. But no test is perfect. So and the other end is you could have a test and it could be a false negative. And so I think the best thing to do is to listen to the experts who do this testing. And then if you have any doubts, retesting is a way to confirm the first result.
Thanks for calling in. Dr. Patrick Remington is with us. We're talking about the latest COVID news in Wisconsin, and he's answering your questions. We'll go to Deb now in Menominee Falls. Deb, hi.
Hi. My question has to do with the treatment for anyone that's being diagnosed with COVID in the advent of or the aftermath of the president having been diagnosed and hospitalized and now discharged so quickly. We know that there was a cocktail administered to him. And what's the likelihood that the average person is going to be receiving that kind of a cocktail as part of their treatment plan?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, I think it's important that any treatment for COVID undergo rigorous clinical trials where people who have the illness are given the drug under study, but also then people are given placebo. The only way to know if a medicine works is to do an experiment and to compare it to the clinical course of somebody given a placebo. And we don't know that for that immune therapy cocktail that the president received. There's a clinical hunch that patients seem to do pretty well that when given this, but it's not proven. So I think the first question is, we should all wait until rigorous studies have been conducted, the FDA has looked at the results of those, and then decide if that treatment is actually effective. The next question is, do we have the resources to provide that to everybody? I don't know. I don't know the cost of that treatment. I don't know how long it would take to get into the sort of routine pharmacies. But the most important thing is to use the effective treatments that have been demonstrated. And I talk to healthcare providers all the time. They are looking at the evidence and using only proven therapies for patients in the state of Wisconsin.
Thanks for that call. In our last 30 seconds or so, what is your outlook for Wisconsin for the weeks to come?
Well, I think we're in a very potentially dangerous position because it doesn't feel like it today at 80 degrees, but very soon it'll get cool and then cold. And when people move inside, air does not circulate as well as outdoors, obviously. And so I think we don't know what's going to happen as the temperatures get cold and people go inside. So I think we have to just focus on the things we know work. Stay outside if possible. Wear a mask at all times when going outdoors, certainly, or out shopping. And then keep in touch with your friends and family. There's important during this time when we have to be physically distant to remain socially connected so that we don't have more impact than just the virus alone.
Dr. Remington, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Rob. Have a good day.
You too. It's Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus and Associate Dean at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at Wisconsin's record-breaking numbers of new coronavirus cases.